Very proud to have Chief Mark Barnard with us. Chief, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. How are you all doing?
Doing fine. I appreciate you taking time to be with us. I know you're busy up there. You are in Philadelphia, and is this a police chief conference?
It is. It's the International Association of Chief Police, and there's about 14,000 public safety from all over the world that are here and discussing issues like we're discussing, violent crime, drug abuse, and other issues that are occurring in our community. So it's a great place to network, meet people, and see what they're doing and bring things home to try in Lexington.
And they're all over the world, huh?
Yes, all over.
Wow, that's impressive. Well, there was a big story primarily on television over the weekend. It was probably in the print media, too, but it was about our 26th homicide that occurred, I think it was Saturday night. It was a stabbing. And that places us one homicide away from the record, which was 27, recorded in 1999 and again in 2001. And I just wanted to have you on the air to talk about that, to get your reaction to it. I'm a big proponent of and supporter of our police department, and I think it's good to note that the population is about 70,000 more now than it was then, so that does tend to change the figures. But what do you think about this homicide rate this year?
Well, it's a national issue right now. I mean, it's occurring in Lexington, it's occurring in Chattanooga, Nashville, Cincinnati, all in our region and all across the United States. And it coincides with drug abuse. Once again, we saw the crack cocaine epidemic that came in the 90s, and we saw the homicide rates increase then. That was tied mostly to the drug trade. Now we have it with heroin, and we're seeing it. Of the 18 arrests that we have this year so far, we know that they know their perpetrator to the suspect. I mean, suspect to the victim is a known relationship. So we have that information and are looking at it. Most of our homicides are tied to illegal activities or drug trades. Not everyone, mm-hmm. but most of them that we are seeing right now. And we've had a domestic violence issues this year with two homicides occurring with domestic violence. So homicides rates don't define a community, but they are reflective culturally of what's going out throughout the country right now. And violent crime, and the FBI has said it for 2 years in a row, nationally has been on an uptick going through it. So culturally, our country is going through some issues. We're seeing the opiate epidemic rise, and we're seeing the drug trade rise again, and we're seeing those influences from outside the country and throughout the world. And those things affect us here locally.
Sure. And what are your associates saying at this international conference about that? Any solutions?
Well, the biggest thing is right now the drug use, and that is a thing that everybody's trying to work on, and the criminal justice system looking at some reforms and doing it. And everyone agrees that looking at the people that are having issues along with addiction and just locking them up as we've done in the past hasn't worked. But we're trying to focus on people that are importing, and most of our drugs are cartel-related. Don't underestimate that the things coming into the country are a big issue for even in Lexington. So we're working on that. The drugs that are coming in from China and coming in from Mexico right through the United States, and that's where we're getting the fentanyl mixed in. And they're just now finding fentanyl mixed in with cocaine, which is still probably the number one drug that we're facing. We do more seizures of that than anything. So
why do they do that?
The epidemic in the country is tremendous still.
Why do the dealers do that? Why do the dealers mix fentanyl in? It doesn't that make it more expensive, or does it make it less expensive, or why do they do it?
Less, they're cutting it with it, so they'll cut it so they don't have to use so much heroin or cocaine. They'll use fentanyl to cut to mix into it, which is just that people are getting it, and it's unregulated from where they're getting. And it's so addictive, the issues with the opiate, that when you're mixing it in with it and you don't know what you're getting, and it's easy to overdose. I tell people when we went through a class with the Drug Enforcement Administration, we've had to change the way we field test. We don't field test drugs anymore, the way we package it, the way we search. 6 grains of salt in your hand. That's what it takes of fentanyl to overdose your body, six grains of salt.
Wow. I was looking just generally online at statistics this morning, and I know I shared some of these earlier, but I also preface it by saying you can't believe everything you read or hear. But this is a website, and maybe you're familiar with it, called Neighborhood Scout. You know that website?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And on the Neighborhood Scout website, we in Lexington, under crime data, rate a crime index of 8, meaning that We are safer than 8% of the United States, and that would mean if that statistic is accurate, we're less safe than 92% of the United States. Do you believe that?
Well, we're one of the safest communities, and it's hard to tell a family. And I'll say this: I hate these conversations for one thing because I work so closely with families that have been victimized by these violent crimes. Mm-hmm. And if you try to tell them we're a safe community when they've lost their son or their daughter or loved one, mm-hmm. it's just not going to resonate well. And when you're saying we're on a record year, that sounds like we're celebrating something instead of saying we're on a tragic year.
Good point.
Looking at these homicides. And I hate that. I know the media and the television and everybody wants to sensationalize things, but the truth is, unless you're engaged in some criminal behavior in Lexington, you're not at risk unless there's something else going on. So most of our homicides are targeted between known offender and the victim in Lexington this year. We've had other cases, and we've had that. You ask Tamara, and she lost her daughter, an unborn grandson. And you ask Kwame El-Amin up in the park. We've had those cases where people have been victimized randomly by acts of violence between other people. But this year, we haven't had that as much. So Lexington's a really safe community. We look at the numbers. We look at the stats. We follow it every year. This year, we're actually down. And when you look at murder, rape, robbery, assaults, burglaries, larcenies, auto thefts, and arson, those are called Part 1 numbers. That's what we report to the FBI for comparison values. We're down 1.3% compared to last year. Auto thefts, it's unbelievable the auto thefts we have in Lexington. Our largest number of crimes that occur in Lexington are larceny, people stealing things out of cars, which are almost 7,000 this year. Wow. Auto thefts, you would think in Lexington, we're at 1,105 auto thefts. Mostly those are young men and women going out getting cars that people leave their keys in, driving around and breaking into other cars and using them for other crimes. So those are our largest crimes that we have in Lexington. So we're a safe city when you're comparing it, but you're only safe as you feel. And I think most people, I hope most people, feel very safe in our community because our officers do a great job of engaging the public, working with people. We've made a true emphasis on looking at violent crime and looking at youth and focusing and getting back into schools, not as police officers, but as mentors into the schools. And we've worked with so many programs with police academic teams, athletic leagues, Big Brothers, Big Sisters program. Really engaging, so when the young people see all the way from elementary all the way up to high school an officer, they know the officer's name, they know who he is, she is, can go up and feel comfortable in talking to him. You know, people forget about it all the time, and I had a friend tell me, he was, you know, they see a police officer, they go, oh, no, they're the cops, and they slow their car down or do something. It's teaching our kids to be afraid of the police instead of walking up and say, hey, there's someone that's there to protect us. Right. We should walk up and say hello.
Okay, I got a few minutes left with our police chief, Mark Barnard. He's on the line from Philadelphia at an international police chief's meeting in Philadelphia. I've got a text that came in during that break, Chief, saying of the 26 murders that we've had this year, how many of them have been solved?
We have 8 open cases right now, and we're following up on leads on those investigations. And we feel very confident with all 8 that we have some solvability factors and forensic evidence to close those cases. It's a matter of getting all those reviewed and getting the witnesses in and talking to them. So we're very confident on the 8 remaining cases that we have.
There is a term that I learned through Ray Larson, and that is clearance rate. And my understanding is that the Lexington Police Department has an extremely high clearance rate. What is that?
We're usually at an 86, 87% clearance rate, and that's really high for the country. The rest of the country is usually around 56% clearance rate. So we have an exceptionally high clearance rate, and they do great work, and we have great people in those investigative units, all the way from the patrols officers responding to the investigators looking at it and our forensics unit. So they do outstanding work, and they're very dedicated to the families.
What does it actually mean, though? Clearance rate is what? Solving the crime and then having the criminal convicted, or what is it?
It's not a conviction. It means that we know who did the crime, that we can put our hands on that person and charge that person and have probable cause to charge that person. So if John Doe is the person that we're looking for, that we can go out, present our probable cause to a judge, the judge sign it, we get a warrant, and arrest John Doe and bring him before the court, and then that case would be cleared at that time.
I think it's important to point out, and you have, but just in case someone just tuned in, is the majority of the homicides that occur in our city are people that know each other. That means there's some contact, and usually it's of a criminal nature, and there is no way that any police department can prevent that, because if you're going to go to somebody's house and you're going to get mad at them, or you're not going to get your drugs and you kill them, there's no way that the police can intervene in that situation except after the fact. Now, if there's some random person going out here and just shooting people, that's a whole different situation. But that's not the situation that we have here, right?
No, that's exactly right. You know, in 98, we had, and I worked the case, and Craig Sorrell and I worked the Resendez Ramirez case, and that was a serial killer, mm-hmm. and Tommy Lynn Sells, who came into Lexington. We don't have those instances now. We have 18 of the 26 cases we have now. Our suspect, our perpetrator, knew our victim, and they knew them from some activity. So, and criminal activity, that says a lot of what they're engaging in right now. And it's either a retaliation or it's a transaction that they're working. We had a case the other day where we had a home invasion. So the officers went, they responded, and we ended up coming back with our narcotics unit and charging everyone in the house because they were involved in selling narcotics out of the house. Mm-hmm. That's typically what we're running into when we're seeing these home invasions, not the atypical where somebody is actually a stranger is breaking in and trying to steal medication. Mostly what we see are people that are going to the houses doing robberies, and there's a reason they're going to target that house.
Mm-hmm. All right, one more thing, and I'm going to change direction here since you're at an international meeting right now with police chiefs from all over the world. Are you guys dealing very much with terrorism, and if so, what have you learned in that regard?
It is really fascinating to listen to some of the things and issues internationally and nationally what we're facing between domestic terrorism and international terrorism, and looking at how people, it used to be that Al-Qaeda would come in and say, we want a plan, we want structure. And ISIS does not do that. They're a flash-to-bang organization. They say, take any weapon that you can, go to any event that you can, and do it in our name and make something happen. And that has changed the game tremendously. So they're changing tactics. That's quickly. I don't want to go into what they're doing, but
sure.
They're quickly changing tactics.
Yeah.
And the way that we're responding, we just had the chief from Orlando speak to us and talking about the Pulse nightclub. And the individual, the suspect that went into there, called E911 and threatened to put a vest on with explosives and blow everything up, which slows down the response.
Yeah.
Officers all the way back to Columbine used to contain it, wait for specialized units, and we don't do that anymore. And Lexington's the same way. We train to go right to the threat and to eliminate the threat. And we try to tell the public that because there's this perception of we're going to stop and help pick people up and bring them out, and we don't do that. We go straight past everyone, everything else, so no one else gets hurt, and go straight to the threat, and then eliminate the threat. And you wouldn't have heard that language 20 years ago,
really?
But you hear it now because that's the way our country and the world is.
Have you guys discussed Las Vegas at all?
Las Vegas is still, we have discussed it, and the chief from Orlando actually told us he went out to Las Vegas and worked, because some of the things that you don't think about or people don't realize is, you know, after the event, after everything happened, and he was saying even with his agency, as soon as Las Vegas happened, he contacted and had people come in that were able to talk to the officers that responded to the Pulse nightclub, because it bothers them as much as anyone else. And when things like that, he said, the chief in Las Vegas, this won't be a year thing, it'll be an anniversary. It will be, because we memorialize those things so much. He says it'll go on for your officers forever, thinking about how to respond. And some of the videos that they showed from their body-worn cameras and looking at that, and the officers moving right towards the fire and covering people and moving towards the shooter, is amazing to watch those individuals, and I'm very proud to be part of the profession, that mm-hmm. went straight to the shooter to try to eliminate that threat, and watching them work and protect people. And it's pretty amazing. In the Pulse nightclub, the lieutenant that was there that took over the scene, a very brave person, he was here. He got up, and they gave him an award, and how he went in and took over command and control of the Pulse nightclub and was rescuing so many people. And the fact that the guy was saying, I have a bomb on my chest and I'll explode it if you all don't leave and if you try to come in here, and they stayed within 30 feet of there until they could get a ramming tool and ram the restrooms and get more victims out. So really honorable people and really great to listen to the tactics and what they're doing. We work with a lot of partners in talking about terrorism and domestic and international anymore. Even in Lexington, our largest events, we have to deploy more than we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you probably don't see it, and we don't want you to see it, but we want you to know that you're safe. And it's a lot of responsibility now.
I know there's a lot of, or not a lot perhaps, but there's some controversy involving body cams. Have you guys talked about that during this conference?
Oh, goodness, yes. So everybody is body cameras. They're so new. They're coming out. Everybody's moving towards them. There's 20 body camera vendors up here. Agencies are talking about it, policies, how to write policies. The policy that we wrote in Lexington, we looked at policies throughout the country, worked with the ACLU, other people, and more people are trending towards our policy and the style of our policy and the content away from other policies. So we felt like we were kind of on the front with it and very fortunate. And still something you have to look at and go back and review and make sure you're using it correctly. But the body-worn camera is changing policing throughout the country right now. And mostly it's very helpful. We're experiencing a lot in Lexington. People will call up and have a complaint and say, I don't feel this was right. We go back, we look at the footage, and we invite that person to come in. And we're seeing 90% of the time, 90% of the people that see the footage and we explain to them what the reasoning was are satisfied with it. So some people just are never satisfied. We understand that. But right. The body-worn cameras are showing us what we believe, that the officers are really doing a pretty good job.
Chief, I am very thankful for you and your entire force. I think we've got one of the best police forces in the country, and you guys keep doing it, man. I wouldn't trade jobs with you for anything in the world, and most people wouldn't, I believe. But thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
All right, Jack. Thank you all. Have a good week.